Hi everyone, this is Janice, your neighborhood nutritionist. I've spent the last couple of years helping busy office professionals upgrade their health through upgrading their nutrition. And one thing was very obvious. Nobody's got time to read up on all the scientific stuff to know fact from fiction. So each week, I will talk to you about a different topic or concept in nutrition in simple, everyday terms, so you are empowered to make the best nutritional decisions. Get ready to learn about some new stuff, gain new insights into old concepts, and super boost your health. Alright guys, so today I've got Jesse, the creator of the Health Boss Blueprint here, and we're going to actually talk about how to be healthy without fitness. So Jesse, thank you so much for coming to my podcast and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
When we initially connected, we had such a long conversation, I remember, about everything to do with health and fitness. And it was really interesting to me that you wanted to focus on how we can actually look at improving our health without fitness, because those things usually come hand in hand. But before we get into that, I thought I'd ask you how you actually came to, you know, came on this path, and why did you create the Health Boss Blueprint?
So it's kind of a multi-step process, but it boils down to the fact that I was working at a big law firm. I was a partner at a law firm for several years. And so that meant a couple things for me. It meant that most of my work was sedentary. It meant that I worked a lot of hours and simply did not have time for the gym. And a lot of people get very snarky and judgy about that and say, well, if you're really serious about your health, then you'll make time for the gym. But that was not possible for me because I was literally sleeping only about 3 or 4 hours a night for years on end, which is extremely dangerous. And also that type of work led me to travel a lot. And one particular moment stands out when I think about kind of a turning point. It's when I was at an airport and I was going from terminal to terminal, and connecting the terminals was a ramp. It wasn't at a steep incline or anything like that, but it was just at enough of an incline for it to be a real struggle for these two parents who were, they were overweight and they had these younger kids and they were really struggling to keep up. Now, these two individuals did not look like they were very old. And it it was very heartbreaking for me just watching these two people struggle, having to take breaths and take breaks as they were going up this ramp, having to cling one hand to the wall, connecting this terminal to, you know, the next terminal. And it was just so sad. But these are the kinds of things. Well, first of all, you can't judge people just by, you know, how they look. That's inappropriate. But it nevertheless saddened me because statistically, I know that there are so many things that are reversible and unnecessary and preventable, but it's completely inappropriate to approach anybody and saying, hey, I can help you with that. That's not right. People have to come to you. But it really struck me watching this family, and I had to kind of choke back tears. I had to make sure I didn't get all emotional right there in the airport. That was hard to watch.
So you mentioned statistics as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about statistics in the US in that area?
So I know about these statistics because I essentially, a couple years after I saw that family through my own journey, I ended up leaving that law firm and I became a nutrition coach and I developed the Health Boss Blueprint. But when I was doing all of that, I dove into the science really, really hard. And the real science, not, you know, the peer-reviewed journal articles, which that's what matters. And knowing how to read the science, I have training on that from before I went to, even when I went to law school. So when it comes to the statistics in the United States, there are 100 million people who are pre-diabetic. And when you talk about pre-diabetes, you're talking about type 2 diabetes, which is not only preventable, but it is reversible. A lot of doctors don't know that. And a lot of doctors tell their patients when they're pre-diabetic, well, now all we can do is manage it. And what does that mean? Medications. That's all that means, which is a real tragedy because it is preventable and reversible. It doesn't even matter if you have it running in your family, because also what runs in families are habits, eating habits, food habits. So that's one stat. There are also 34.1 million adults in the United States with diabetes, and there are over 7 million people, these are 2020 statistics, who had no idea that they even had it. They were underdiagnosed. They were undiagnosed. So that's very scary, since diabetes can be deadly.
In the UK, we actually have 4.7 million people who have diabetes, of which a shocking 90% is type 2. I think only about 8% is type 1. And I was just reading on, you know, for people who are interested, you can go on diabetes.co.uk. And they talk about how someone is diagnosed with diabetes every 2 minutes.
Wow.
Right? And at least around 10,000 people in the UK have end-stage kidney failure because of diabetes.
Wow.
Right? And, you know, there are plenty of statistics if you want to be shocked. For example, every week, diabetes leads to more than 169 amputations. Oh. A week.
Oh my God.
You know, so I mean, I'm not going to go on because I don't want to dampen our spirits too much, but suffice to say, you know, this is not something that is only a problem in the US and in the UK, right? And I think just before we, you know, go on to maybe talking about what are some of the reasons behind these, I'd just like to remind people of what we mean by metabolic syndrome or diabetes. So I don't know, Jesse, if you want to talk about what diabetes is.
Well, diabetes is raised blood sugar, essentially, and there are two different camps when it comes to thinking about type 2 diabetes. There is the camp that says, well, it's because you're eating too much sugar. And then there's the camp that's saying, no, it's because you're eating too much fat. And the fat, it clogs your cells being able to process that sugar. Both camps are right to some extent, and it's just a matter of making sure that you don't have elevated blood sugar, because that can that's essentially what does it, and you can go into diabetic coma if you don't have the right amount of insulin. And also there are some doctors who say, well, really it's a matter of having too much insulin. So prescribing insulin can be it can be a never ending rabbit hole of weight gain. It's like trying to forcibly shove more sugar into your cells through insulin, but you become dependent.
Yes, and I think quite closely linked with that is something called metabolic syndrome. So metabolic syndrome is actually, let's call it a collection of different health issues. So if you have at least 3 out of 5, then you might be diagnosed with metabolic syndrome. And these are abdominal obesity. And I think, you know, there's probably a little bit of a difference in terms of what the standard numbers are. But in the UK, it's a waist circumference of more than 102 centimeters in men and more than 88 in women. And then comes a word that I don't think I can pronounce, but I'll give it a go, and it's hypertriglyceridemia. And I think that is about the fat level in your blood. And then you've got things like low HDL, high blood pressure, high fasting glucose. And this is why, you know, I kind of wanted to mention metabolic syndrome, because I think being diagnosed with diabetes, chances are some people might also have other issues.
So that's correct. And, you know, type 2 diabetes often goes hand in hand with some of the other things that you listed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going back to, apart from these horrific statistics, I don't really want to go into the shock and awe mode in this episode, but maybe let's talk a little bit about what are the more common reasons you've encountered or you think are behind unhealthy habits leading to these outcomes?
I think there are myriad reasons why we see the problems increasing over the years. It's interesting because with the internet, you know, we have an information superhighway at our fingertips and we have for, you know, many, many years. But nevertheless, mm-hmm. with more information, you think that we would be able to do better. But in fact, we've gotten worse. I think that one issue that seems to be the truth across the board is that we have an increase of processed food. So again, with the two camps, because you have a high carb camp, you have a low carb camp. And it's interesting because they throw stones at one another. But there are some commonalities that often get ignored in these two camps. So the high carb community, they will throw stones at fat. And they'll say, well, you know, you have a lot of trans fats, and trans fats are truly terrible. Mm-hmm. And even the low carb community will admit that trans fats are absolutely awful. But you know, trans fats are found in a lot of processed foods. And the low carb community, they'll throw stones at sugars and they'll say, well, now with, you know, you see such an increase in these low fat products. When you're talking about products, what are you talking about? You're talking about processed foods. And anthropologically speaking, historically speaking, the human body is not designed, so to speak, or is not adapted to handle these processed foods. Now, I'm not saying that I don't eat processed foods. I do eat processed foods, mm-hmm. but I do so with a mindset of being cognizant of what I'm doing. I understand what it is that I'm doing to my body. And so I try not to make that something that I do more rather than less. So I think the increase of processed foods is a big deal, not only because of the fact that it's processed. And so it sort of shocks our system every single solitary time, but also because often mm-hmm. these processed foods, they're a combination of simple processed carbs with some of the worst fats that exist on the planet. And that combination is deadly, not just from a caloric perspective, but mm-hmm. from a hormonal perspective, because whether we like it or not, people say, well, calories in, calories out, that's all that matters. That's not the beginning and the end of the story. That's part of the story. So we can't ignore that. But hormones matter because there are hormones that are fat storage hormones, insulin being one of those hormones. And so when you have these processed foods that combine the very simple carbs along with some of the worst fats that exist on the planet, they trigger our hormones in a way that stores fat and also can lead to cancer. So you're getting the fat storage, you're getting the increased factors of metabolic syndrome happening. And this is happening more and more and more as the increase of processed foods comes into our communities.
Yeah, I think, you know, having read a lot of books and watched a lot of documentaries around nutrition, the research definitely is exactly what you said. So if you look at some indigenous people, look at how they've been super healthy, even though their indigenous diet might not fit modern nutrition standards. But once you introduce fast food, convenience foods, their life expectancy goes down.
Right.
Right. And which is quite a stark realization, I think. And I remember when we spoke before, you also talked about this cycle of judgment and paralysis.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that as well.
So there are a couple of things about this, sort of these new ways of thinking about bodies and dieting and losing weight versus not losing weight. And one thing mm-hmm. has to do with the body positive movement. There is nothing wrong with feeling positive about your body, but what happens is that we get into a cycle where if we have weight loss goals, or if we want to improve our waistline, then mm-hmm. some people will judge you for giving in to weight loss or diet mentality or diet culture. Mm-hmm. And so you get judged by the body positive movement, and people assume that you're not body positive. Also, if you don't lose weight, well, then you're judged by people for all the reasons that overweight people are judged typically, which is not right. And people judging others, it's something that is natural, but is annoying and ridiculous. And it's by people who don't have enough to do in their own lives. But it's really frustrating for people who have a weight loss goal. So I am big on the idea that you can be both. You can be body positive and have weight loss goals. The idea that these two things are mutually exclusive is erroneous, and it is very harmful. Also, I think that people get into analysis paralysis, whereby they try to research and research and research because they want to do things perfectly. They want, if they're going to go on a weight loss journey, they want it to be the most efficient, effective thing possible. And it takes, let me tell you how many hours of research this takes it to really do it right according to the science. I myself have done over 1,000 hours of research and secondary research into the real literature. That's a lot of time that people really don't have. And so what sucks is that when they get into the rabbit hole of the research, they get paralyzed. And so they don't do anything. People are so afraid to try something and for it to not work that they don't try anything at all. And that can be very detrimental. And it can also be detrimental for their mindset and for your psyche, because once you go toward a weight loss journey and let's say it didn't work out for you, you certainly don't want to get back on that horse again. Most people, that's their experience. It's not that they've never tried anything ever in their life. It's that they've tried something before. It didn't work out for them. And so now they don't want to try anything ever again unless they, quote unquote, know it's going to work and be perfect. And that takes a lot of research that people just don't have time for. So they don't try anything again. And that's harmful for them.
Yeah. And I remember talking to someone about this and saying, this is actually a much simpler thing to think about. Just imagine you are online shopping. You see this amazing top that looks super nice on the person on the screen. You buy it. It gets delivered. You try it on. Looks horrible on you. Right? But there's actually nothing wrong with the person on the screen. Nothing wrong with the item of clothing. And nothing wrong with you. It's just that it wasn't the right combination of things put together. Yeah. And I think that's a very important thing for everybody to remember, is that especially these off-the-shelf diets, they are designed by somebody who is not you. They don't live your life. They don't have your body. They don't have the stresses, the routines that you have. So I think it's actually pretty fair to assume that it might not work.
Right.
If anything.
And, you know, I'm a big believer in that there is no one way to lose weight.
Exactly.
And I think the big problem that I see in the weight loss industry, since I'm neck deep in it, is that you have these quote unquote gurus who talk about the way to lose weight as though there's only one way. And then you have people who they read the testimonials. They want the success that match the testimonials that they've read that are associated with this one particular way of eating. And so they white knuckle it. They try. Well, you could try very hard for at least some period of time, but at some point you jump ship. And usually when people jump ship, because, you know, willpower only lasts so long when you're doing something that doesn't work with your lifestyle, with what I call your food personality. So when you jump ship, a lot of times what that means is doing everything 180 degrees in the opposite direction, because you're going to go all the way. You white knuckled it. You went all the way into this diet. And now that you're out, you're going to go all the way out of the diet too. And that is what I call weight loss whiplash. You know, one extreme to the other, that's also not good for your health overall.
100% agree. I think, you know, I mean, that's a really ironic thing, actually, that the fastest way to gain weight is to go on a diet. And it's all to do with this restriction mm-hmm. concept, right? A lot of people love restricting. And I'm just going to say it to everyone else, stop it. Like, we all just want to feel good, right? Humans, naturally, we want to feel good. That's why we have cravings of certain foods. Foods bring memories to us, etc. Right? So instead of focusing on restriction, we should be looking at what actually serves our bodies the best.
Right.
Right? And which segues very nicely into, I guess, the big question of today's episode, which is, how do we actually get healthy without the seemingly huge element of fitness? Because I know that for a lot of people who work full-time or who simply are not athletically inclined, mm-hmm. fitness is a big, big blocker for them. But personally, I've also had clients who don't exercise and still improve their health and lose weight. So,
right.
How do we do
it? Well, that's all I do. I don't have any of my clients get on a treadmill and exercise. Mm-hmm. Look, exercise is good for the human body. The research supports that. I don't think anybody's arguing against that, but that's not the issue. The issue is that exercise, it's a bonus in terms of weight loss. You do not lose weight in the gym. You lose weight in the kitchen. And the exception mm-hmm. to that is if you are a pro athlete, then you, mm-hmm. But that means you're doing it all the time. That's all you do. My clients are busy professionals. And so mm-hmm. if they want to take a walk around the neighborhood, go ahead. That's going to benefit you. That's a bonus. But my whole blueprint revolves only around the kitchen and the notion that you lose weight in the kitchen and through food. So there are lots and lots of ways to do that. What I have people do is I have them take a food personality quiz, and it's mm-hmm. and because the whole point is for people to lean in to where they're already at instead of trying to be something that they're not. Where are you at? Let's assess where you're at and let's have you lean in, because there are lots and lots and lots of ways to lose weight without having to change the entire way that you eat. My best friend is Japanese. So she grew up on rice and noodles. You try to tell her to go low carb, mm-hmm. it's not going to work out. It's just not. And you can't tell a person like her, okay, things are, it's impossible for you. That's it. Weight loss doesn't work for you because, oh, it's only low carb. That's the only thing that works. That's not true. And you can't tell people, well, you know, you can only lose weight if you hit the gym or if you exercise all the time. That is poisonous. Unfortunately, now I'm a big Michelle Obama fan. All right. I really am. And that's a bias that I have there, but the movement was really, it was well-intentioned. It was meant to be very helpful to get especially kids to move more. That's great. But that led to a big perpetuation of the assumption that the way that we get healthy and lose weight is through movement. When that's not true, that's secondary. So the way that you lose weight and improve your health is through what you put into your body, aka your food, because you are a walking chemical factory, whether you know it or not. So the food has a chemical chain reaction inside your body when you eat it, and that's a fact.
Before we wrap up, I would like to ask you, you know, hopefully you don't have to give away any trade secrets, but can you give our listeners three actionable tips in terms of how they can start improving their health or losing weight without any of these ridiculous fitness regimes?
Absolutely. Okay, so the first thing that I would tell people is to get more fiber into your diet. And that is going to be, you know, like fruits and vegetables, yes. And if you can tolerate grains, then wonderful. Whole grains, of course. And these are the fiber. What it does is that it can scrape out. This is kind of gross to think about it this way, but it really can clean by scraping out the kind of the nastiness that builds up in your intestinal tract and also mm-hmm. your arteries too. It can clear out the plaques in your arteries. So we need to be able to get more fiber into our diet, and you can sneak these things in. So whatever it is that you're eating, think about, how can I sneak in some fiber? So can I throw in a couple of spinach leaves? Can I chop up like a little tiny bit of broccoli and just add it in there? Is it going to negatively affect the taste or the experience of it? And if the answer is no, throw a little bit of extra roughage in there for you. That will not hurt. And not only does fiber sort of scrape out the linings of your piping, but it also it adds to your feelings of fullness. So you want to get that extra fiber into your body. We don't eat enough fiber. The second thing that people can do is they can add water-filled foods. So that these tend to be the more fibrous foods also, but you know, it doesn't work the same way, for example, if you have, well, in the US we call them chips, and in the UK you call them crisps. So these are dry foods, and if you drink water with them, no, that does not add to the same feeling of fullness, and it does not have the same effect in the processing of that food in comparison to eating a food that is already filled with water. So for example, porridge, if you have porridge, it's cooked with the water is in there, and so it adds to your feeling of fullness for a longer period of time. So you want to do that because it's feeling full. That's what we're missing. You can eat these processed foods, and you can eat a lot of processed foods before you get full. If you want to, if you want to feel full, you need to get these water-filled foods into your system. And then, gosh, to even like limit it to three, it's like there's so many things that can be done. So the third thing I will say is that you want to make sure that you try to convert the fats that you eat into a more natural fat. So I like to have people add a little bit of natural fat, and I'll explain what I mean by that, with their fiber-filled foods, because if you don't do that, then even though, let's say a zucchini, that's a water-filled and fiber-filled food, and you might feel full, but that might not necessarily be too satisfying. And it can go straight through you. So like 20 minutes later, you're hungry again. Well, you don't want to be hungry again 20 minutes later. If you add a natural fat, so nuts, olives, avocados, those are my top three. I love them. And even though I know avocados are, they're plentiful here in Los Angeles, not necessarily plentiful in a lot of parts of the world, you can even go and get store-bought guacamole if you want to, if that's available to you, something like that. These are going, these natural fats, the reason why they're better than adding a processed fat like butter, ghee, or oil is because they also contain fiber and phytonutrients, which are great for the body. So those are three tips that you can implement right away. They're going to add to your feelings of fullness, and they're going to make those foods stick longer with you. So feeling fuller for longer, and also those natural fats add to the feeling of satisfaction. That satisfaction.
I love all of them. And my final question is, what is the one food that takes you to your happy place every time?
Oh gosh. It's avocado. Avocado. I mean, I know I'm spoiled in Los Angeles, but for me, avocado is like the perfect food because you have the natural fats in that avocado. It is water filled, maybe not to the extent of a strawberry or a zucchini, but you do have water that's in there, and it's so creamy and satisfying. It's full of fiber, and it tastes great. I know some people who really, really don't like avocado. It's hard to find those people. They don't, it's something about the texture doesn't work well with them. But if you like avocado, oh, I can even eat avocado, a little bit of salt and pepper, maybe a little bit of garlic with it. Oh, it's just perfect.
And that's it for this episode of Neighborhood Nutritionist. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I hope you've really enjoyed it and learned something you can take away with you today. If you could take a second to share this episode with one person you think will love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening now. See you soon!